You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, Mike calls, the buy-in goes up a little higher. And then Mike is competitive, man. I remember one time we played spades for 36 hours.
What? Damn.
What? We played spades for 36 hours.
What is the story behind the wheelchair?
I wasn't there, but he said he had used the bathroom, man. I think Jason Tatum is that next Celtic that we'll be putting up in the Raptors. I never partied, man, and played basketball that much in my life, man. We partied in Miami.
Yo, welcome to All Things Covered with Patrick Peterson and Brian McFadden, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. The name says it all. If you like what you hear, make sure you leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube. Just visit youtube.com/allthingscovered. So make sure you subscribe and turn on your alerts so you can get the show right away. We've been focused on football, but you guys know Pat and I love basketball as well. So we wanted to bring you this bonus episode right before All-Star Weekend in the NBA. We hope you enjoy our chat with 3-time All-Star and college and pro champion Antoine Walker. Yo, All Things Covered. You guys know what time it is. This is a big time week when it comes to the NBA. NBA All-Stars getting ready to happen. And with that being said, we thought it was only right that we go ahead and tap in with the individual who didn't just participate in the NBA, who didn't just win championships in the NBA. He also participated in All-Star games as well. NCAA champion with the University of Kentucky, 6th overall selection in the 1996 NBA draft. Many believe that probably is the best draft ever. We will tap into that subject a little later in the show. 3-time NBA All-Star. You can also watch him make appearances on First Things First on Fox. Antoine Walker, coming from Chi-Town. Mr. Walker, how you doing?
Coming from very cold Chi-Town. Yes,
I'm here. You keeping warm up in the Windy City?
Yeah, it's not bad. I'm from here, man. I can take it. I'm doing good. B-Mac, that was pretty good, man. I like that warm introduction, man. I didn't know what you was going to say, but that was pretty good.
Man, you know I got to lace you real decent, man. You know I got to lace you real decent. Join us here, All Things Covered. First things first, Twan, with the All-Star game happening this weekend in hot Atlanta. We know you have played in many All-Star games, 3 All-Star games to be exact. But when you look at some of your All-Star appearances and playing around some of the elite players that you were with on your team and playing against, you know, what are some of your more memorable All-Star moments?
For me, it's actually really special, probably than a lot of guys, because I played in Michael's, both of MJ's, both supposedly their last two. 98, that was his last one before retiring. Madison Square Garden, I can remember that whole weekend being around, was he going to retire? Were they going to break up the Bulls team? Scottie Pippen was, you know, looking for a contract. It was a lot of turmoil going on with the Bulls at that time, and Michael, and a certain, you know, Michael saw. That was special, and it was in Madison Square Garden, too. That was my first one. And then, obviously, in 03, Michael's last one was really, really special, because we knew that was going to be the last time Michael played, and he put on a heck of a performance in that game. So All-Star Weekend has been great for me, the 3 times that I participated and played. Obviously, I've went and supported every year, even when I wasn't playing, but it's a special time for all players. It was great for me.
Yeah, well, since we're talking about Mike, you grew up in Chicago and you grew up as a Bulls fan as well. Well, your first NBA game was against the Bulls. You know, how hard was it for you to flip from a fanboy to your competitor side?
Oh, it was real hard, man. It was actually a surreal moment for me in life, because obviously I grew up a Bulls fan and cheered for them the first 3 years that they won in 91, 92, 93. And then my first game happened to be against them. A little nervous, obviously, when, you know, to play against Jordan, Robin, Pittman, guys that I looked up and cheered for. Now I'm on the court competing against them. So it was tough. I always remember I didn't play particularly great against them because of that. And, you know, I always wanted my revenge back for that group. So I got them back the following year. We played them again the first game of the season. So I got them back then. But this is a special moment for me and my family. You know what I mean? Cause, you know, even my friends, everybody, cause we grew up diehard Bulls fans, and then to be playing against them, it was one of those surreal moments for me in my life, and something that I always remember. And I'm asked that question frequently a lot, about that moment. So it's one of the special moments that I took with me in my highlighted career.
Do you remember your record against MJ?
111 when he's with the Bulls. Mm-hmm. From that, you know, so we beat him one time in 97. We beat him to start the season. So I went 111. And then I think when he's with Washington, I dominated. I probably went 6-2.
Okay. Yeah, you definitely, you know, against the Bulls, you were 1-11. Your teams didn't stand a hot chance.
You looked the stat up?
Yeah. We want to make sure, you know, we got information to back what we're saying. Yes. I wanted to know
shout
about
out
you.
I was going to lie about that. Okay.
Yeah. 1-11. Do you have any funny moments? Because we've heard stories, you know, for us, never playing in the NBA, never coming close to playing in the NBA. We kind of live through stories from guys that participated in the game. But when you talk about MJ, man, at some point in time, we all had love for MJ. Granted, if you were a Laker fan, Bulls fan, Celtics fan, you love MJ. Football fan, it doesn't matter. But talking about the competitive nature that he has been able to display, were there any moments on the court when you're going against the legend, the icon, the guy you looked up as a kid? Did he ever talk trash to you? Did he ever say anything to you? Or did you ever say anything to MJ?
Oh, without question. Well, I was very lucky, man. So in 2001, when Mike decided to come back, at that time in Chicago, I was kind of the CEO of the pickup ball of getting all the guys together and playing and working out together. And Mike called me. I think I just got out the playoffs. We just got knocked out the playoffs. And he called me, and I was like, you know, obviously I knew Mike and, you know, played against him, but I never had his personal number. So he called me and was like, listen, I don't want you to say nothing. Don't tell nobody. I'm thinking about coming back, but I need to get in the gym and I need you to get all the guys in the gym to play pickup ball. So I'm like, okay, this is Michael Jordan. So I didn't stop my vacation. I didn't stop everything. I'm locked in totally now. Like I got to lock in now. So that's how I end up really meeting Mike in 2001. And we end up spending the summer together. And at 39, when he came back, man, you understand, I saw the competitive juices from that point on. Every day, B-Mac, we talk trash every single day. The run was so thick, and you guys can understand this and imagine this. The run was probably about 35 pros every day. If you lose, you threw. You lose, you may only get two games in. And Michael does he wanted everything like, no, first class. So we had referees. They call a foul. This pickup ball. So everything is like a real game and competitive as hell every single day, man. The way he pushed himself to get better and better, to watch him compete against all those top wings. And at that time, it's, you know, the Penny Hardaways, the Tracy McGrady's, you know, Scotty was still all these guys at the gym playing pickup ball every day. I also remember that summer, Ron Artest, who probably was the toughest defender at that time, cracked his ribs. Wow. Playing against him. Like, it was like one of those summers. So I got to see it firsthand, and he taught me so much. He the one got me to work out with Tim Grove after that. Like, I never had a trainer. I used to just play pickup ball every day. I never, like, lifted a weight or none of that. I used to just play ball every day. I thought that was working out. So just to see him, how he competes and how he wants to be the best every single day, I learned that every day. So when I watched The Last Dance, I already knew all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that was just like a confirmation, like, okay, this is Mike. But everything's trash talk. We make basketball, off the court cards.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that, the Bure battles, because Pat P, Antoine plays Bure as well. And anytime we have a guest on, you know what I mean, that's familiar with the game of Bure, we like to tap into that element. Yeah, so talk about some of those story card games that you participated in.
So you had M on some Boo?
Oh, yeah. M played everything. Boo, spades. he really was a poker player though, but I wasn't a big poker player, so he had to get into spades and everything. Bure, he had to get into some of our games.
Right.
But we probably gambled 3 days out the week. His restaurant was right across the street, not even right across. They shared the same parking lot as the gym, so it was many a days he'd be like, "Let's go to the back of the restaurant and play and have dinner." So we've had many of those days, but yeah. When Mike calls, the buy-in goes up a little higher. Let me just start with that. So it's going to be a number put on that everybody got to bring to the table. I say probably 20,000
is the cap. That's cold hard cash. 20,000.
Yeah. You got to have 20 to get in.
Just to get in.
You ain't got 20 to get in. You can't even play. So that starts that. And then Mike is competitive, man. I remember one time we played spades for 36 hours.
What?
Damn.
What?
We played spades for 36 hours. We were playing against two other guys. We were playing against two other guys. Me and Michael were partners, and we were playing against two other guys. And they had us stuck B-Mac 900,000.
What?
Yeah. So you guys familiar with spades, right?
Yes, sir. Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
So you familiar with spades. So you know, so y'all know the first hand. So we were playing the first hand bid itself.
Yep. Okay. Right. Yep.
So whoever gets seven, we was betting 50,000 on that.
What?
Betting 50 on who gets seven and then 50,000 on the game.
Were y'all playing, Joker, Joker, Deuce, Deuce, Ace? Nope. Or were y'all playing Joker, Ace, Joker, Ace?
Ace, King, Queen. Ace, King,
Ace,
Queen.
Ooh.
Ace King Queen, man. That was the, and this was the crazy part. That we played for 30, and what made it even more interesting, it was the day that he actually supposed to make his announcement that he was officially coming back. He canceled the press conference, everything. We played for 36 hours, man.
Did anyone ever find out why he canceled the press conference? Did that news ever break?
Nope. Cause we did it. We was down, and actually we was down the street from the press conference in one of our good friends' restaurant at the top of the restaurant. And we played for 36 hours, man. We was down.
So, wow. Yeah. 36 you, Matt. Hours hey, straight?
Matt, hey, I thought you stayed up all night and gambled and beat you, man.
Man, oh, yeah. Oh, no question. We didn't stay up. No, we didn't make 24 hours. So my question for you, Tuan, did you guys actually have the cash or y'all were playing with markers?
No. This all cash.
Ooh.
So that's what happened.
This is what happened. I was leaving for Boston in a couple days. So I had about 100,000. I was always a cash person. I had my money. Mm-hmm. MJ had about 200 on him. MJ sent for a half a million. Cash sent for it. And then you got to think the other guys we played against had money too.
Yeah. Right. So, y'all, yeah, so of had, course. Of course.
So, yeah, they had us down 900,000, man. We got back all the money except 20,000. Mike did not want to see them with 20,000.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Y'all were down 900K and fought back?
And fought, 36 hours fought back, baby. Competitors, you know how this go. We on that
and won 880,000 of that back? You say that they had 20.
They had 20. Mike didn't want to send with 20. So they ended up winning that. They ended up winning 180. He got too tired. We couldn't go no more. He was falling asleep at the table.
And cancel the press conference on his return.
But that's how every gambling session didn't go 36 hours, but we had some competitive gambling sessions. Wow. But that was, you know, the great thing about it, people would be like, oh, man, that's what's part of, you know how we do as athletes.
Yeah.
That's how we are. We was having fun every single
day. Juices be flowing, man. Yeah. You golf, Torn?
Yeah, I'm a golfer, man. I've been golfing for about 16 years.
So you've been out there with him a bunch of times then?
Yeah, but I'm not in this group.
Okay.
So
I already know how M put them groups together.
Yeah. So the best thing about being friends with Michael Jordan, you play a lot of great courses.
Oh yeah. A lot of y'all.
Yeah. Yeah. But I wasn't in that group. I'm about a 14 handicap. You know, Mike them scratch the four.
Yeah.
Them boys shooting even a par 2-3 over. I'm going to shoot that thing at 90. So we always just play behind them, get out their way. Yeah, right. my little group do our own little thing.
Man, that's awesome. Hey, man, so.
I'm still
I know you are.
About that.
I see him put the pencil in your head and everything.
I'm still stunned about that 36 hours, 900K, man.
36 hours, man. We missed the press conference and everything, man.
Legendary story. Legendary. Hero all things covered.
The way he sent for the half a million was legendary.
He had somebody go get the money. How you do that? Man. How you say, hey, go get me 500K
right
quick?
Yeah, he said, tell his nephew, look, go in the penthouse. Don't let Juanita see you. Go in the golf bag. I got some in the golf bag. Bring me that little briefcase in the golf bag. It came back nice and neat. I don't know if you ever seen a half a ticket nice and neat in all hundreds. You can get it in the briefcase. You got it in the briefcase.
Hey, that's crazy. Hey, man, but Matt touched on earlier that 96 could possibly, you know, go down as, you know, one of the best draft classes in NBA history. One of our favorites, Kobe Bryant, passed, you know, a couple years ago. What did you take from not only the moment him passing, but that draft class, that moment?
Obviously I was deeply sad and heartbroken. We all know what Kobe did for the game, and you always feel some type of special connection because of the class of 96. And, you know, me and Kobe were, I wouldn't say we were great friends, but we were very respectful. And anytime we played against each other, it was always love. All-star weekends, We've had more extended conversations. So even though you may not be that everyday friend, you still feel something because of what he obviously did for the game. But just seemed like something that was missing. I mean, when he passed away, you just seemed like you missed, you know, something from the game that was missing because I don't know how you guys feel. I know B-Max is a huge Kobe fan, but I felt like he carried the torch from probably, you know, 2000 to 2010 to LeBron got to Miami. Right. It was Kobe's league.
And
I think it was his era and his time where he held the league down. I think what was more saddening is that we were just starting to get to know Kobe. Mm-hmm. He was just starting to open up and kind of become like a person that we finally can touch.
Right.
You know, he was starting to be out more in public. He was, you know, obviously he was a family man with his daughter and everything. He was starting to, because when I played, he never really talked to a lot of guys. He was in a lab by himself. He never really, you know, communicated with a lot of guys. And that was kind of one of the knocks on him. But you see the Kyrie Irvings, the Trae Youngs, these guys are young that were going out and spending a lot of time with him on and off the court. And to see that, we were finally getting the opportunity to see the real Kobe Bryant come out. So that's what made it even more sad. And just to add to that 96 class and the lighter note, I mean, just go top to bottom. See, you guys keep looking at the top part of it. You got to look at the second round picks, guys that were impactful in the NBA that really helped teams. I don't think no draft class was as strong as us. I mean, it's some classes that probably are better than us at the up top, but I doubt it.
So I was going to ask you that, you know, so do you believe 96 is the best NBA draft class ever?
Yeah, and that's always tough because I'm a part of it. But yeah, I do believe from top to bottom.
Oh,
yeah.
Who would be 2 and 3 then following 96? If 96 is one, who was 2 and 3?
And consider they got 84, 2003, and 2000.
84 had Jordan and Dream in there.
Yeah, I got 03 behind us, and then I got 84.
Oh, you got 03 in front of 84?
03 tough, man. That top five strong.
Yeah, all them boys.
They're top heavy. They're top heavy for sure.
Yeah, they top heavy, but them boys strong, B Mac.
I mean, then for listeners and viewers that are tuning in,
for the back end.
Hey, the 03 draft that Twan is referring to, you got LeBron, you got Carmelo, you got D Wade, Chris Bosh. Man, you got, remember Josh Howard had some pretty good years from the Mavericks.
Yeah.
So you got some top flight ballers. David West, Mo Williams, Kyle Korver.
Hey, cause that man, LeBron James, he can be five people in that draft.
When you got LeBron and D Wade, you know
what
I mean?
That's what I'm saying.
So they got Hall of Famers too. But that 84 draft for the people that are listening to us, you got MJ, you got Hakeem, you got Charles, you got John Stockton, Alvin Robertson, Otis Thorpe, Kevin Willis. So you got some notable names.
But our listeners our listeners may not know that 84 class like talking about.
84 is always tough because I think we might be still on tape delay.
You know what I mean?
I think we went to live TV to Magic and Bird. Took it live TV. But before that, it was tape delay, B-Max. So you didn't get a chance to see everybody play.
Yeah, like you can now. If you're a basketball fan, you might not have seen some of those guys play that's a part of that 84 class, but you know who they are.
But
I can tell you this much though, Twan, I agree with you. 96 is, and we used to have this discussion in Chicago. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was on 96 train back then when we used to have this debate. Like 96, man, you AI, look how many trendsetters, impactful players, champions, all stars. You know what I mean?
Guys that really impactful to teams. Yeah. That 96 class tough.
Hey, Twan, to go back on Kobe real quick, do you feel, I know I feel, cause I am a Kobe Bryant fan as well. You know, in the NBA, during the time where the West was real, real heavy, you know, you had the Steve Nash, the Dirks, when they was winning, you know, the West. Do you feel Kobe was robbed a couple MVPs?
I think he was robbed. I think they were like 500, but that's the year that he had those consecutive games of 40 points.
Yeah.
Even the 80.
He had a month.
80,
he had a whole month.
Yeah, 81. Like, yeah,
and I think the 81 was in that. And that's when they really kind of saying you got to win games to be the MVP.
Right. That was 06.
That year was undoubtedly should have been Kobe's MVP. He definitely got robbed. And it's the same thing is happening to LeBron right now.
Yeah.
You know, right now, you know, we expect greatness. He's been consistent and he's getting robbed on a couple of them too. So that's the bad part.
Man, and to back what you're saying, he averaged 35 a night, but finished fourth.
That's crazy.
See? That's crazy. I know. I
think
it was crazy. He got robbed that year.
Yeah. The year Nash won, he finished fourth.
Average. Yeah, Nash. Nash back to back that year.
I like them spreading the wealth. I mean, you know, I'm a Chicago fan. Derek is one of my friends, but Derek should have never got it that year. That Derek got it. LeBron was unbelievable that year, and they actually beat the Bulls in the playoffs. But the Bulls won 65 games.
Listen to one. I understand what you're saying about LeBron should have won it that year. D Rose won it, but boy, D Rose was special.
Yeah, he would do some special stuff. Boy. He would highlight every night.
Yeah, hey,
Speaking of D Rose, and I used to talk to you about this all the time with, you know, your Chicago roots and your Chicago ties. If D Rose don't get hurt, who is he as a player, NBA player? How different is his career?
He would have been Steph Curry.
Really? I was going to say more like Dwayne Wade. He more flashy
I'm not talking about actually
Westbrook.
I'm talking about celebrity-wise. Because if he don't get
the
Bulls probably keep that team intact. I don't know if they could have got past LeBron and got to the finals, but they make a run for the next couple years. The Bulls team was intact.
Was that Thibodeau?
I remember – they win 65. They come back that year. He should have took them out the game. They was in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They win the playoffs again. And he got hurt while they was up like 20.
Yeah.
Y'all remember he got to us ACL when he's up like 20.
Yeah, when he drove. Landed wrong. Y'all remember that?
I think he would have been that celebrity like Steph Curry.
It's safe to say, Twan, because of the market, he would have had an opportunity to be bigger.
No question.
The brand in Chicago, is something different than out in Oakland,
I don't know all the details of Steph deal. I don't know all the details of Steph's shoe contract deal, but D Rose's shoe contract is strong. It's up there. It's worth $300 million.
Yeah.
And he signed that a long time ago.
Yeah. He got 186 of that was guaranteed with incentives.
Yeah. Long time ago.
And Derek is still on that deal.
Yep, you're right. Good point.
14, 15 years. So just imagine that. He got the $300 million Adidas deal. Yeah, you're right. Playing in Chicago, no telling how much money he would have made. He would have probably been bigger than Steph. You're right.
No question. Let's transition to your Celtics days. Of course, you know, being one of the premier superstars there. And then here comes the truth in Paul Pierce. And Paul is expected to get enshrined into the Basketball Hall of Fame pretty shortly. How deserving is he? And what was special about your relationship with the truth, Paul Pierce, on the court?
First, let me start. I think he's very deserving. I'm so happy for him. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. A fierce competitor. People don't know about him. He's a Michael Jordan type of competitor. Never shies down from competing against anybody. You guys can probably tell that now from his commentating that how much he give himself flowers over a lot of players that's playing now. But that's truly how he felt. He felt like he was just as good as LeBron. He felt like he was better than D-Wade.
Still don't like LeBron to this day. You can tell when he does his thing.
Those are true feelings.
Yeah.
You know, and people may think, well, he's crazy. He's this, that. But those are true feelings by Paul. But I think he's well-deserved, man. I think I saw the work that he put in. Very unique player. Unbelievable mid-range game. Great body. Can get to the foul line. Like I said, his competitive spirit is out there and wants to win. And we just had a great relationship, man. We played 8 years together, 7.5 years together. I could see his offensive talent. I kind of took a backseat to him a little bit offensively and let him do his thing because his ability to get to the basket and get fouled. But I loved it because I can curse him out. He can curse me out. And we were the men on the team, and we still got along. And still, everything was still the same when we got off the court. We never clashed there. So 2 years ago, I had the great fortune to go to them putting his jersey in the rafters.
Yep.
And be a part of that weekend. And that was special for both of us. So we got a chance to reflect on everything and kind of rekindle our friendship. I'm happy for him, man. I'm looking forward to him going in. It's well deserved. Cause you know, he does not get the national notoriety as a lot of people, but it's good to see the basketball world know how good he is.
Wow. Right. Hey, I got a question for you since you know my man, the truth so well. Mm-hmm. How, like, what is the story behind the wheelchair? Was it really? Talk to me about that.
I wasn't there, but he said he had to use the bathroom, man. he said he had some skid marks, man. He want, He said he had some skid marks, man.
Wait a minute. So he wasn't actually hurt, but he had to use the bathroom. That's why he required the wheelchair. Right. He asked for the wheelchair. Yeah, he couldn't walk. He couldn't.
I guess he wanted to make it worse.
They had that white on, Matt. You remember now? They had that white on.
Hey, B-Mac, you know you don't wear no white tights, man. He had the white tights on.
Hey, the funniest thing, though, the grimaces that he was giving us there. Like, he was really
kind of having a cramp. Hey, I can tell you this much. He need to go into acting and forget being an analyst, because he fooled everybody. I never heard that story that I thought he was faking. I'm like, man, Paul, he's being dramatic. And you know, Twan, sometimes y'all basketball players, y'all can flop. Y'all great actors. Hey, you know that.
Hey, Twan. My boy Paul Pierce have a phrase now in the Arizona Cardinals locker room. So I remember, I forget what guy we pulled up, and he got banged up in practice or whatever. He was like, hey, man, I know him, man. He got a little Paul Pierce in him.
He didn't do that with me, man. He stayed tough with me.
Man, listen, this man had to use the bathroom, Twan. I did not know that. Man, that's big time information. He couldn't walk or run, so he requested a wheelchair, and then he come back out like Willis Reed.
And dropped like 30 or something.
Yeah, yes. I was going to say. Yes. He went crazy. I think he came out and dropped 3 for 3. He came out and dropped three for three and threes or something crazy, man.
He had to go relieve himself, to say the least, and he came back as like a madman. Hey,
and the crazy thing about it, you know, he already run like he already got something in his tights anyway.
Yeah.
Hey, it's on Paul anyway for wearing white tights. Like you say, Twan, you don't wear no white tights.
No, you don't wear no white tights. You know that, man.
Yeah, you don't wear no white tights.
And white shorts.
Speaking of your Boston Celtics days, Danny Ainge comes in at 2003. He trades you almost right away. Then in 2005, you're back there with the team shortly for about 20-something ball games. He didn't offer you a deal with the Celtics, man. What was going on between you and Danny Ainge at that time?
Well, you know, when he first came in, as a guy, I thought I was going to be there for a long time. Yeah. We had just lost in the second round of the playoffs. We probably was a point guard away from being able to compete with New Jersey. New Jersey was kind of dominating in the East. They went to the finals back-to-back. Back to back years. So they kind of was dominating, but we never really had nobody to compete with Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd was probably the best point guard in the league those couple years when they went to the finals. So we drafted Marcus Banks. I go into training camp. We get to the last game. I think everything is fine. We ready to make another run and see if we can beat New Jersey. And he just traded me. And basically it was a point. It's kind of how sports is. He didn't particularly like me. It wasn't the fact that I did anything. He didn't like my game. Individually, so he chose to move on. And he also didn't like the fact that I was beloved in Boston at this time. I had 7 years in the organization from top to bottom, would kind of, you know, had bought in and kind of got behind me. And I think he wanted to be the man. And it's kind of funny, but he wanted to build the team and be the man. And if you really look at when I left, they became the worst team in the league.
Yeah.
And then that second year, it got really bad. He hired Doc. But he was lucky enough to pull off an unbelievable trade to get Kevin and obviously Ray Allen to come over there. Yep. But that's kind of what it was. We went at it publicly in the newspaper. This back before social media, before you went on Instagram and Twitter and had words. We went at it in the newspaper because he told me something. So it's crazy. I'm in Atlanta and we're terrible. We're like 10-40. We're halfway through the season. We're coming up on All-Star break. And the equipment manager called me and he was like, would you come back to Boston? And I'm like, it was my contract year. Like I said, we was losing, but I was playing really well. So I was like, you know what? I'll come back. You know, they were like one game under 500. They had a chance to make the playoffs. I'm like, you know what? I'll come back. And they made the trade. Lo and behold, we go there. We win 13 out of 14 games. We end up winning the division. And we got upset in the first round of the playoffs by the Pacers in 7 games. I think it was Reggie Miller's last year.
Rick Smits, Reggie Miller. Yeah.
And we end up getting upset in the playoffs the first round. But the same thing happened again with Danny. He tells me he's going to take care of me. We're going to build this thing. We're going to see if we can win it. First day of free agency, B-Mac, I didn't get one phone call.
Wow. That's how it happens, though.
Pat, I didn't get one phone call from him. Every other team called me, and honestly, it was crazy because it had got like 3 weeks in the free agency. You guys know that. 3 weeks, all the money dried up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You got to get that money right away. So I was turning down money to thinking that they were going to make something happen. I had to call the ownership group.
Wow.
Of the Celtics. Mm. My agent was like, look, you need to call the ownership group and basically tell Danny to take some players back and do a sign and trade. And that's how I ended up with the Miami Heat. If you look at the – tell Eric to look this up. I think I'm still the largest trade in NBA history. It was like 13, 14 players.
The amount of players, yeah.
With the amount of players for me to even get to Miami.
Yeah.
Because Miami didn't have any money. I had to call Shaq. Because Shaq had bird rights where he could have got – at this time, it was – Michael was the only guy that was making $30 million a year that made $30 million. So it was Shaq's turn. He could have made like 34, 35 a year.
Wow.
So we got Shaq to take a 5-year deal for 100.
Uh-huh.
Instead of taking like 3 for 99 or 3 for like 97.
Yeah.
I had to call Shaq, man.
Nice.
And tell Shaq, hey, big fella, I'm coming, but I need you to, basically take a pay cut. Well, he didn't really take a pay cut, but take more years.
Right.
And he ended up taking more years.
Wow.
And that's how I end up getting to Miami. But Danny, for some odd reason, to this day, and you guys know this, you guys play for great organizations, but to this day, my first time seeing Danny was at Paul's retirement. And, at the retirement, I mean, we spoke, but that's the reason why I can't go there and work there or anything. Yeah. Cause I mean, I'm still great friends with people in the front office, the ownership group, but they're going to go with their guy. Danny Ainge is their guy. He brought him a championship. They're going to follow his direction.
Speaking of some of the names you talked about, Greg Ostertag, Rasul Butler, Kirk Snyder, Raul Lopez, Jason Williams.
Look at that, James, man. That damn G League team. It's a G League team.
Andre Emmett, Eddie Jones. Man, that was a lot of players, Taquan. And real quick, we're going to transition to your Heat days in the championship. Mm-hmm. But two-part question regarding Danny Ainge. Mm-hmm. Number one, should he have traded for James Harden? Because I heard the Rockets wanted Smart and Jaylen Brown in return for James Harden. And if there is any truth to that, do you think he should have made that trade? And then secondly, what are your thoughts about the current crop of Celtics? I mean, seem to be a bit inconsistent this year. Granted, there's still a lot of basketball left to be played, but they're not doing as well as many thought they would do.
I don't think he should have made the trade. I like where they're at with their two young stars. Well, actually three. I put Marcus Smart in there. I know he's been hurt.
You said he didn't have to, he shouldn't have made the trade?
No, I'm not a James Harden guy.
Oh, you just, yeah, that's personal. That, yeah, you're just not a James Harden guy.
It's not really that I'm personal.
That you don't like his style. You don't like the style that he plays with.
You can't win with that style. You know what I mean? He's in a very unique situation now with Durant and Kyrie. But it remains to be seen. I don't think you can win with his style. Anytime it takes a guy 6, 7, 8 dribbles to get where he got to go, that's a problem. It works in this day of game, in this game that we playing now, because the floor is much bigger. It's more of a pick and roll league, so he gets away with a lot of things now. But I would not leverage. Not only the Celtics or any other team. I would not leverage my future for James Harden. Period. I wouldn't do that. The current Celtics, to answer the second part of your question, I like where they at. I think Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown can be really special. I think Jason Tatum is that next Celtic that we'll be putting up in the Raptors. I think Marcus Smart is a big piece of what they got. Where Danny Ainge made a mistake, he let Gordon Hayward walk out the door without getting nothing in return for him.
Yeah.
So if you know you can't get to $120 million, if Charlotte's going to pay you that you don't want to pay him, you got to say, okay, look, let me do a sign and trade and get them a legitimate bid. I think they should have went after Dwight Howard much harder.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he could have been a great addition to their team. You could have probably traded for Andre Drummond and added him to them. He's young. They had a legitimate center with that group. And it's unfortunate. I mean, he made a great signing to Kemba Walker, but I think Kemba Walker is not telling the truth. I think his knee is messed up. I think he's trying to fight through it, and he may not be the same player again because he's trying to play through it right now. But I like the core. I don't think they're a championship team. I know a lot of people put them in championship category. I just think they're a good team.
No. The team that's going to be a championship caliber team is the team that James Harden is on.
Yeah.
Oh, but now you didn't ask me that question. Now, I do believe they're going to the finals. But let me tell you something, Matt. You want to go to the Super Bowl and lose?
No, I don't want to go. But if I get there, there's a chance I can win. You don't have a chance of winning if you can't get there.
If you get in the party.
Yeah, if you can't get there, you know you don't have a shot of winning.
If they healthy, Brooklyn definitely getting there because, I mean, teams can't get to 125.
This is how I look at the James Harden potential deal with the Celtics. Number one, he's better than both players, the both key players you were going to lose in Smart and Brown. Offensively, he's better than both guys. Number two, if you add James Harden, you alleviate any other team in the East and potentially trying to get him. So you don't get James Harden, but now you might have to play against him in the playoffs and he's going to sit you down.
Yeah, but I can't leverage my future for him. At that time, you got to think about it. He played a few games for Houston. He looked like he's not in shape. So that kind of scares you.
Yeah.
The way he did it, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes when you want out, you come in, you kill, you know, you show your worth if you want out. You know, it kind of looked like he was going the other way. But I guess that just was a part of his move to get up out of Houston.
Boy, he cutting up real bad right now.
No, I tell people, like, man, I got them to get out the East. Once the best thing for them was when Durant got set down for this hamstring, it allowed them to get some chemistry and get some of those role players to play in and figure out. Now those guys have got confidence. Nobody in the East can beat them. But I don't know. You better hope that man number 23, AD don't come back. If AD come back and come back right, I don't know if they can get past LBJ now.
Yeah. Well, talking about the 2006 Heat championship team, I know that was a magical year, obviously. I think that was Pat Riley's first year back, I believe, coaching, right?
Yes. Yeah. Stan Van Gundy started the year off, and he fired Stan 20 games to the season.
Right. And Pat ended up taking over. First of all, how legendary was that season having Pat Riley, the man, Pat Riley, come back down and coach the team, and also having as many legends that you guys had on that team in that 2006 championship run?
Well, let me start off with saying, like, that's one of those surreal moments in my career to be on that team with. Let me just start with Gary Payton, Lonzo Mourning, just to start with
Jason Williams,
guys. You know, White Chocolate. Then, you know, Shaka D Wade, everybody knows, but Shannon Anderson, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Derek Anderson was on the team, James Posey.
Oh, yeah.
Udonis Haslem, Darrell Wright, you know, those guys. And we had a slogan that year that said 15 strong. And I never played on a team. In college, it was close. But I never played on a team where guys stayed together. Like, you know, it was very, very seldom. And in the NBA, everything is really clicking sometimes. But in that year, you always saw 7-8 guys going to dinner.
Hey, Twan, where y'all used to go to?
In Miami? Yeah. 112. You know, we have 112. You know, 112. You know, we have 112. Back in that day, it was at Diamonds. And we was at Diamonds all the time.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, and that was the crazy part is about it, that we had so much fun, that group. And Pat Riley was such a slave driver. I understood. We learned firsthand why he was such a legendary coach. We used to have 4-hour practices, man. You got to wear your knee pads, knee brace, all that stuff. Full practice contact. I mean, his approach was not to be best with. Everybody had body fat and weight every week. He pushed you every day. Nobody was bigger than one another. And film session, he would get on D Wade as much as he get on me. Just the way he did things, everything was done in an orderly fashion. That's just how Pat was. So even though we necessarily didn't have the greatest season where we won 60, 65 games, but we won 52 games like third, but we knew that we were going to be ready come playoff time. We knew that nobody could beat us. We knew our biggest hurdle was to get over the Detroit Pistons, who had dominated the Eastern Conference for like 5-6 years. And then in the finals, we didn't care who we played. We knew we could beat anybody. But that's a special year. I always tell people, man, that was my best year ever, being a part of a team and a culture that everybody came together no matter what. And y'all know how the season is. You know, it's going to be fights and all type of things that go on with guys. I mean, that stuff never got out the locker room and never got out of hand. And we just pushed each other, man. You can ask anybody off that team. I never partied, man, and played basketball that much in my life, man. We partied in Miami. I don't know how I made it, Pat.
You had some legendary streetwalkers, to say the least.
No doubt about it.
GP, Posey. Yeah. You and Posey used to go hard. I can see y'all boys out.
Me, Posey, and GP.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, GP didn't like the beach.
Hey, yo, Twan, what was GP favorite drink? What is the only thing he only drank?
Patron, that Pat Ron.
Pat Ron. Hey, then you had the CEO of Miami too, Udonis.
Yeah.
Yes, UD. And you know what? UD, man, UD was so great because he kind of showed the ropes and you know, got them boys. So when we was out, the boys kind of protected us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. Sure I already know. That's why I said that's a CEO.
Yeah. So we was able to go to Diamonds and act a fool and be able to get out of there.
Right.
Now, guys, this is before King of Diamonds. This is Diamonds. This is the original Diamonds. Okay.
You know, we brought that.
Which is now known as G5.
G5, yeah.
Oh, really? That's G5 now?
Yeah, that's G5. That's the same building.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, that's what it is. I didn't know that.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Hey, that definitely was a legendary team. And I know you guys bringing a title to Miami is a big deal. And how was it, celebrating a title in the city of Miami? You know what I mean? Understanding what that meant to the city and what you guys were able to do.
You know what made it great? Cause it was the first one they had. And Pat has worked so hard to try to build a championship team there. It don't have a feeling like, Chicago or Pittsburgh, cause Miami's not necessarily a sports town.
Yeah.
You got a lot of people from a lot of different places, but I thought the way people came out and supported us in droves, and people still remember. Anytime I go back to Miami, I mean, you walk the streets, people still remember that 2016. And I know LeBron them has brought a couple more titles since then, but we still hold a special place.
Yeah.
I think of people because of that first one. And you know what else to add to that? I think that goes as an understatement. I think what makes it special, Alonzo.
Yeah.
I think it's really Alonzo and, you talk about Giordano's being the CEO.
Yeah, he was on that team.
Alonzo and to see what he went through that year, man, you guys would not imagine, the medication and how tough it was for him to get through that season, with his kidney and, to see him do that every day and to put his body through that to get that title made it even more special because he wanted one. And it's kind of like Patrick Ewing. You would always love to see Pat on the Knicks and get a championship with the Knicks.
Right.
It was the same thing with Alonzo, because he did so much for that organization.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jason Tatum hit your patented shimmy in the bubble last year. Where did that move come from? And what are your thoughts when guys mimic the shimmy, when you see guys do it
now?
Well,
I mean, I'd like guys to give me a little credit for it, but, I would like that. But no, actually, man, I just, in college, being a fool, being a clown in the locker room and messing with guys and dancing and having fun and just, Rick Pitino is such a, he's so strict and everything's by the book. So guys would dare me that I would dance.
Yeah.
During the game. Cause, coach, everything got to be, done by the book. So he told me I could dance as long as I get back in the press. As long as I didn't mess up the press, I could do it. So
that boy was pressing the whole game back then.
Yeah. So I just thought and when I got to the league, it took me a couple years to kind of really start doing it. But once I got in the league, I started doing it. It just came natural.
Yeah.
I played for one coach that told me don't do it. Don Nelson asked me not to do it.
Wow.
He old school, man. That's Hall of Fame. When he tell me, hey, say, Twan, I don't want you doing your shimmy. He was the only coach to tell me that.
Yeah.
So in Dallas, if you watch Dallas, I think I hit like two game winners in Dallas. I may have did it there, but Don Nelson didn't want me dancing.
Wow.
Have anybody ever hit the shimmy on you?
Oh, man. No.
Nobody ain't pulled your own move.
This is the thing, Pat, with the shimmy. And then you got to go back and, you go on VL and say, I got different versions of the shimmy.
Okay.
See, I got a layup when you get layup and a foul shimmy.
Yeah.
I got hitting the three shimmy.
Yeah.
Then I got the at the buzzer shimmy. Like, I got different variety shimmies. You got to go and watch it now. Yeah.
Hey, Eric going to have to pull out these different versions of the shimmy.
Yeah, Eric going to pull this out for sure.
Yeah. It's a game winning shimmy. So I had different versions. These guys don't got different versions of it. So,
Do you have a golf version of the shimmy on the court?
Nah, he said he was 14, Mac. He ain't got no golf.
Hey, you say he'll have it, huh?
I'm a 14, man. I'm just trying to shoot bogey golf, man. I'm trying to stay in the match, man.
Hey, no doubt. Hey, Twan, before we let you go, we're going to transition to the superlative part of our show, hit you with rapid-fire questions. Number one, biggest piece of advice for players entering the league now. You've been extremely open about your financial mistakes early in your career, but what would be the biggest piece of advice you would share to new players?
Financially, I would say, obviously, the biggest thing I try to tell guys is that, careers are short. If you're fortunate to play 10, 15 years, that's great. But, plan as if it's going to be your last paycheck. If you do that, consistently every time you get a new deal, at the end of it, you'll be good because you're going to retire at a young age. No matter if you're coming in, because guys are coming in at 18, 19 years old, you're probably going to retire at 35. That's a lot of life left after that. So I try to always let them understand that because some of them don't think like that. When you're 18, you're not thinking about 35. Right. So I always try to embed that in their head that, hey, look, at 35, you could be done with this game and you got a whole life to live. So make sure that you make sure you're putting up something for that rainy day for the end of this thing when it's all said and done.
Okay. I think I know the answer to this question, who I think resembles you, but which current player in the NBA resembles Antoine Walker?
Oh, that's a tough one because there's so many players that can handle, but a lot of them can't really shoot it. But you know who I really like, and his offense has went down the tubes, but in the beginning, I liked the Draymond Green in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I thought Draymond had, you know, with the passing ability to rebound, he was a better defender than me, but the skill set, being able to make the three, make plays for the team, those type of things, I thought it was Draymond. And Lamar when he was in, too. And even though I know me and Lamar kind of played together, but we had similar games.
See, I was going to say Lamar or Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, we had similar games. Melo used to do it early in his career. Like the last 5, 6 years, Melo became this, you know, footwork guy. You know,
right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He's became more of a footwork guy. But Lamar and Draymond, but Draymond's offenses went down the last couple years. He can't really score no more.
I don't think his offense was his offense.
His offense never was like.
But you know, he would have those moments.
The spurts. Yeah, he had those spurts.
He will. He can. No doubt about it. But he wasn't consistent enough. Cause you gotta think about it though. Like you led the league twice, I believe, in 3 point attempts.
Yeah.
That's big.
Yeah, he didn't really.
Why you would shoot so many threes, Juan?
Man, I got the green light, B Mac.
I think 1 year, Mac, I think they said he had 650-something attempts. Let me find that.
Yeah,
you were playing for the Rockets with Harden and that.
Yeah.
Hey, man, look. Hey, that was one of my advantages at the power four spot.
B Mac, yeah, when you played. You was ahead of the curve.
Yeah, then you got to think in my era, B Mac, I had Garnett.
Yeah.
No, Karl Malone. Karl Malone was still in the league, you know what I mean?
Oh, you weren't trying to go down low with them boys.
Tim Duncan, Rasheed Wallace. Yeah, yeah. I gotta space them boys out, get them dancing a little bit.
Ben Wallace.
Ben Wallace, yeah. Dennis Rodman. I gotta space them boys out, get them dancing a little bit.
No doubt.
Hey, you did that. You shot yourself in the zone.
Right.
I'm a volume shooter. You call me a volume shooter.
You wasn't volume afraid shooter. Of jacking it.
No. Those guys don't get fed.
Biggest problem with the Celtics this season?
The biggest problem with the Celtics is depth. Danny Ainge has done a bad job of adding depth to this team. Jeff Teague seems like he's became a bust. Tristan Thompson hasn't really been great. But that starting five you can put against anybody in the league and they can go toe-to-toe with, but they don't have any bench.
Most likely to win the NBA Finals this year. You said LA gonna be in the finals. You said the Nets.
I got Brooklyn. Brooklyn, barring the injury, if these guys don't get hurt, Brooklyn Nets. I don't believe nobody in the NBA can get the 120, 125 four times to beat them. You're gonna have to get the 120, 125 to beat them.
What?
Four times. I don't think nobody can do it.
I'm confused. You just talked earlier about AD healthy and Bron healthy and what they're gonna do. And then we ask you to pick a champion. You go Brooklyn?
Right now, I gotta go Brooklyn. I'm asking the question right now. You asked me to.
But then you didn't want the Celtics to trade for James Harden, but you're picking the team that he on.
Hey, man. It was a quick question, man. But, the first thing came to his head, man.
But listen. I'm saying the Nets, man. You ain't finna get me on here talking about nobody else. And I got the Nets to win it all.
All right. I'm gonna come back at you when it happens.
I'm gonna come right back at you.
Hey, last question for you. Best five ballers to come out of Chicago. Best five ballers. And it could be a player who never made it to the NBA or if you want to go NBA related, but the best five ballers to ever lace them up in Chicago.
Isaiah Thomas.
That's one.
Mark Aguirre.
Two. Ooh.
Derrick Rose.
Ooh.
Okay.
Me.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamie Brandon.
Jamie Brandon.
Went to the University of King with the LSU with Shaq. Unreal.
Why? Because that might be a name that many people don't recognize, right? Why is he on the top five? Tell us.
Man, the best high school player I've ever seen play, man, from freshman year all the way out. He picked the wrong college, but he was unbelievable, man. Jamie Brown, you can ask anybody that's from Chicago, when they're going to tell you the top five best players, he's going to be on 90% of their list.
Okay, and with that being said, I just added this question, just hearing your answer. Better basketball city, state. I mean, you can go Illinois, you can go New York, but of course you're talking about Chicago and what they look at the iconic legendary players that have come from New York, the Barrels in New York. Who you taking?
That's a tough question. But I would say New York because New York is bigger. Mm-hmm. So I would go with New York. And that's tough for me to say because I believe in Chicago's up there. But I would say New York is one.
Yeah.
We're a close second. Then you got to think about Washington, California.
Yeah.
Probably California, then Washington. Washington came on late. They last 15 years been good.
Okay.
But California. But we second. I'll give New York that.
Yeah, but your starting five Chicago would be you, Isaiah Thomas, Rose,
Mark McGuire,
and Brandon. Jamie Brandon.
Good list.
Yep, and I'm going to get killed because it's really supposed to be D-Wade, but I'm going with Jamie.
Yeah, I forgot you left D-Wade off.
It's D-Wade or Jamie.
And you, Anthony Davis? You leaving Anthony Davis off also?
Anthony Davis was a bum in high school, man. He was 60. don't do that. He grew his senior year. He grew. You know, that Anthony Davis ain't, he ain't no household name here.
The other kid that went to the same school as D Rose?
Jabari Parker.
I think he died. Didn't he die? It was
Ben Wilson.
Yeah. I heard he was nice too.
He was nice too, but you know, I never played against Ben Wilson. And then Ben Wilson played in a Princeton system. We never got to see Ben really get down.
He played in a
Princeton system.
Dang, what was the man name? What was Len Bias from? Was he from Chicago too?
No. Len is.
What was Len Bias?
Is he DC, Maryland area?
DMV area.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, you're right. He's from the DMV area. DMV. Yep, DMV.
But Ben Wallace, Ben Wilson, I mean, a lot of people in Chicago swear by Ben and say he was probably the best player ever. He was going to be the best player coming out of Chicago. I saw a lot of film on him, but he played in the Princeton team, so everything was really basic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the game was different team too, but everything was basic. He played in that type of system, but it's a lot of people in Chicago swear by Ben.
Yeah. Hey, I can't wait till we drop this so our Chicago listeners can either agree with your list or attack your list. But they're going to respect it. They're going to respect it because it came from Mr. Shy himself.
They're going to respect it, but I left D-Wade off. So D-Wade probably going to give me some static.
No doubt.
I can see it right now. Antoine, they're going to have that meme. You remember when D-Wade messed up the dunk contest? Him staring off in the
that's going to be. Became a meme, didn't it? They made that meme.
That's going to be the meme for Antoine's list.
No doubt. Hey, but man, Twan, thank you for joining us here. All things covered. Patrick Peterson, Brian McFadden, recapping your career. Legendary card story. That space story still got me blown. Hey, but appreciate you joining us. And, you know, I'm going to be hitting your phone, but I'm definitely hitting your phone when the finals come around, when the Lakers slap Nets in the face.
Well, this time, you know, man, you know, we got some good. All right, come on, call me. Gonna play
right. All right, man, be safe now.
All right, Pat, man. All right,
AW, be good, baby.
Yep.
Man, thanks for having me on the show, guy.
Thanks again to Antoine Walker for joining us here on the show. Outstanding conversation. Hope you guys enjoyed it as well. Thanks to every listener to this episode of All Things Covered. If you like what you hear, make sure you download, subscribe, and leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube page as well. Just visit youtube.com/allthingscovered. And most importantly, enjoy this NBA All-Star Weekend.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.